Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and again, we're going to be talking about the Kingdom of God, and we're going to be getting into chapter 49. And 49 has this sort of, they call it a blessing of Jacob upon his sons. And of course, it has been my contention earlier in the study of Genesis that this whole picture of, and we'll go back and review this because this actually took place in the earlier parts of Genesis when Jacob was first called Israel. There was an event, some sort of wrestling match. That's what we're led to believe. It's not what it appears to be if we go and read reference to it in other scriptures. And then when we go through those chapters, we'll take a look at the word, you know, wrestling, and, you know, it was his thigh out of joint or was his loins out of joint. And of course, it's my contention that there was a problem with his sons. And his sons were often in some level of rebellion against not only him, but his brother Joseph, of course. That's why they're going into the bondage of Egypt, that they rebelled against their brother. And some people will tell you that the fact that, you know, because there's a reference to this where, you know, you meant it unto evil, but God meant it unto good. It was still evil. When they beat up their brother and threw him in a pit and allowed him to be sold into bondage. And there's even some question about that. We've kind of followed the basic that it was his cousins that bought him out of the pit and sold him into bondage, the Ishmaelites. But there's actually evidence if you look in other contexts, and then you go back and look at the original Hebrew, that it might not have really been directly the Ishmaelites, but it was cousins. I can't find any reference to anything that it isn't either the descendants of Abraham through his last wife, or that it was the Ishmaelites, which would be, and the fact is it can be both. Because enough time had elapsed that these families were uniting. And there seems to be, you know, just like we see with Abraham, married his half-sister. And that's kind of close. And other people, you know, I mean, Isaac ends up taking a wife, you know, Rebecca. And then there's Rachel, who is, you know, from the Laban, who is Rachel's brother. And so there is this kind of intermarrying in the families. Not recommended today, although there are lots of cultures that do it, because of the fact that genetics begins to, you know, it's in the herdsman language, there's line breeding. And then there is inbreeding. And inbreeding is when line breeding doesn't work. And you get something you didn't really want. But there was something, you know, accordingly, there was the flood, and then there was nine generations, and then there was Abraham. Then from Abraham, who leaves Ur and leaves Haran and goes out and becomes this wanderer. This is a man who's going to be referred to as, I will walk according to my fathers. And they're referring to Abraham. And they're referring to Abraham's son, Isaac. And of course, he had lots of other sons. But Isaac is the product of Abraham and Sarah, his half-sister. And Isaac marries Rebekah, who is related. And then Rebekah as and Esau and Jacob. And there's a question of inheritance. And of course, we go back to Abraham. He was 9 generations from Noah, and yet he was blessed by Melchizedek. And there's a question as to who is Melchizedek. A lot of people have theories about that. Well, if you go back to early interpretations, back when they had more writings, the interpretation was Melchizedek was Shem. And Melchizedek simply means righteous king. He was Melchizedek of Salem, king of Salem, righteous king of Salem. Salem is the word for peace. So Melchizedek is somebody who is the righteous king of peace, whose blessing is evidently very important to the progression of Abram to Abraham. And Abraham begins this walk. And it's not in a city. It's outside of a city. And many souls are with him. It's not just his family. He can muster an army overnight, 900 men in his own camp, in his own entourage. That's a lot of soldiers to come out of what? How many families did that come out of? 400, 500 families? That they were able to mount 900 young men to fight a battle. And then he was able to get a large number of other men to come out and fight a battle because he had taught his neighbors how to build altars to kill sheep and to burn them up. No, not to kill sheep and burn them up. The altars, if we go back, and we've looked at this before, you go to Sumer, you go to the other civilizations, you go to Babylon, you go to Nimrod, these altars were systems of social welfare that bound the people together. They had an agreement that they would bind each other together with social bonds from these that were created by these altars. Because these altars were social safety nets. They were a welfare system of a community of people, a tribe, a city-state even, that people contributed. They were either free will offerings, like Moses required, like Jesus required, like the prophets required, or they were forced offerings, like Cain, like Nimrod, like Sumer, like they did in Haran and in Ur. They compelled the offerings. Now, they may have done it rigorously, like we see in Egypt, or they may have done it benevolently, like we see also in Egypt at the time of Joseph. I don't really think, I haven't come across any evidence to prove this, that Joseph was throwing people into prison if they didn't pay their 1/5, production from their labor. And Jesus talks about this kind of thing, where somebody owed his master. And he begged and pleaded with his master, I'm sorry, I haven't been able to pay it. And his master forgave him. Well, that's not rigorous. He owed it, but he forgave the debt. But then he found this servant treating his servants abusively, demanding that they pay. Well, then he came back and says, if you're going to be that way, I'm going to treat you with rigor too. I'm not going to forgive you. And of course, we see the same message in Christ where he talks about somebody coming in without wedding garments, bound up and thrown out. What the heck? Well, just because he didn't have wedding garments? Well, the wedding garments are a metaphor. Just like the foolish virgins. They burn their oil and they dance, But then they don't have enough oil to come into the wedding feast. So they don't bring a lamp into the wedding feast. They don't bring any light into the wedding feast. So they're locked out. They go and get oil, but it's too late when they come back. And they're locked out. These are metaphors. There's allegories. We're seeing the same principle here. Jacob stole his birthright from one interpretation. Because Esau got the, you know, the little yarn tied around his hand when he was being born. So he was counted as the firstborn, but his head didn't come out yet, just his hand. Must have been a rough labor. But Jacob was born first. But Esau had the ribbon around his wrist, which they did to mark who's the firstborn. Because the firstborn's gonna get the blessing. The blessing that comes down from generation to generation. The kingdom of God, according to Daniel, is from generation to generation. But what was all the nine generations of Abraham? Why didn't they, if Shem was Melchizedek, still alive, and according to some Bible chronologies, he should have still been alive when Abraham was alive. He lived a very, very long time. Some reason after the flood, this massive change of seas and atmospheres, and because now we have rainbows and whatever happened. In a cataclysmic event, now people don't live as long. I mean, Jacob lived into, 130 some years old? That's pretty long, but Shem lived way longer. So maybe there was a genetic change that took place, or a change in the atmosphere, a change in the amount of sunlight coming through, because now they have rainbows, according to the Bible. You can get into all that, but we don't want to get into that so deep that we miss the real message of this part of Genesis and this going into bondage. Joseph was special. He was the firstborn of Rachel. And he was a prize to Jacob. But Jacob saw things that other people didn't see. He began to see more clearly, though, but he also went blind. But he began to see more clearly when he went off alone with supplication and prayer and had this wrestling match with a messenger of God. And it states in there something about his thigh being out of joint or his loins being out of joint. Maybe this is a message that he would have problems with his sons. You know, the Simeon and what he did, and Reuben, what he did. There's a question as to what they did, and we'll get a little bit into that, but we'll know more when we go back to earlier chapters of Genesis. But it's very important to know why Jacob was called Israel. Why was Abram called Abraham? They get this blessing. And the blessing is really of the Spirit. And Joseph saw things that other people didn't see. He was some sort of an exceptional genius. And his brothers were jealous and envious, and some of them wanted to kill him. Reuben defended him. But he ended up going into bondage. In bondage, he learned lessons. He met challenges. He was changed by his relationship with his wife and his children. We see it every day in men who have families. irresponsible teenagers suddenly become men when they start having children, or the responsibility of taking care of a wife. Their life becomes about somebody other than themselves. And some men step up, and some men run away. But if you're in bondage, you're kind of forced to face the challenges of bondage. And while the sons didn't always respect Jacob, they were going to learn what it meant to be Israel, because they were going into bondage. A lot of people don't, they try to say that Egypt brought them into bondage. Something Egypt did made them in bondage. No, they went into bondage where 20% of their labor was now going to belong to the government of Pharaoh in Egypt. That's the bondage of Egypt. Their land belonged to the government. They had it by government suffrage. Their children would belong to the government. They were counted the cattle. They counted the people. They counted the children. Because the children were going to be a part of the possessions, the human resources of the government of Egypt. All the people that went in there were going to become human resources. Now, I suspect that Jacob himself was actually exempt. He's an old man. His son, he's blind. He's not a worker. 20% of his labor doesn't really belong to anybody. And his children take care of him. And there's actually been reference to that lately in the government of the United States, talking about people over a certain age being exempt from taxes. That's a tradition, goes back tens of thousands of years, or at least thousands of years. That the old, and then where you bury them. Cemeteries are not taxed. That's, you know, the only thing for sure is death and taxes. And at death, there ain't no more taxes. And of course, Jesus talks about being born again. And so, being born again, is that being born in another system? And could you be born in another system? If Jesus was the actual king of Judea, he could set the captive free by his proclamation and decrees, by his doctrine. But people would have to follow his doctrine. And of course, that's what eventually happened at the time of Jesus. The people were going back into the bondage of Egypt through the system of Corban set up by Herod and the Pharisees. Added a great deal more to the website showing this chronology. And one of the things that we also see in this chronology of events of the New Testament is that right away Jesus appoints 70 people to go out and preach. Who are these 70? Well, it's my contention also, and lots of reasons, and I added more to the website, to our page on Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin is 70. And this is almost a magic number, 70. It's not really magic, but it's a representative number, 7. And just like Beersheba, you know, the well of satisfaction. You can translate it, the 7 wells, or the well of 7, or you can translate it, the well of satisfaction, because the number 7 has to do with this idea of satisfaction, completing something, fulfilling something. And of course, there were 70 of Jacob's family that came to Egypt. And so what am I trying to tell you with this little sidetrack before we get into chapter 49 is that I think a lot more than 70 people came. But of the family, there was 70 that came, and Joseph was already there. That was the Sanhedrin of the kingdom of God, coming first into bondage, and then learning the lessons of bondage, and then Moses coming and bringing them out of bondage. And then when Moses was to diminish, he appointed the first Sanhedrin. And Christ, when he came, he appointed 70. Why did he appoint 70? Well, if you know what was going on at that particular time with Annas, who was mentioned in the New Testament, he was moving the Sanhedrin. Why did he move it? Because a great deal of, under Manahan, a great many of the Sanhedrin walked out because of the corruption that was being brought in by Pharisees, by Sadducees, by rich people in Judea. And, you know, the Romans had been there for a while. Things had prospered. And now people were gaining influence and they needed their own Sanhedrin. Well, what does a Sanhedrin do? Well, they're a part of the appeals courts of Israel, of Judea. The cities of refuge are a part of the appeals courts. Today, we're hearing about judges making crazy rulings and being corrupt and needing impeachment. When Jesus appointed his 70, he impeached those that Annas had moved into the new Sanhedrin, the new headquarters of the Sanhedrin, after this majority walkout of the Sanhedrin. And the Sanhedrin has a whole history of corruption. You know, more corrupt, less corrupt, more corrupt. Go back to Simon the Just, who was almost the end of an honorable Sanhedrin, because he walked in the Spirit. Abraham walked in the Spirit. Jacob wrestled in his supplication and eventually walked in the Spirit. And in this chapter 49, he talks about his sons and the trouble and the difficulties they're going to face in their own future. And the more we know about these tribes and these individuals, the more we can get into the message of the allegory of the gospel of the kingdom. Because the Old Testament, New Testament are all about the same testament of God. And either God is in your heart and in your mind, guiding you daily, or he is not in your hearts and in your mind. And so that's what you have to deal with as we go through this chapter 49 to learn what it means to be Israel and the sons and brothers of Joseph, the sons of Jacob, are going to learn what it means to be Israel and during this time of bondage. If you find yourself in bondage today, you should be asking yourself, what lessons can I learn? What things can I do to repent, think differently, so that God may lead me out of bondage? But we'll talk more about this when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom after a brief break. So welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. So right away in chapter 49 we see, and Jacob called unto his sons and said, gather yourselves together, that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. In the last days? In their last days? In the last days? Some people think these are the last days. So maybe it means the last days that you're in Egypt. Or no, it doesn't really seem to fit. But anyway, it says the last days, so we'll have to figure out what that means. And this is the thing, is this: the story is a message as it was lived to the people who lived it. But it was written down to tell us something. To tell the people of Israel something. Because Moses wrote it down, at least that's what we're told. And he wrote down this story. So what he's putting in there is a message to the people of Israel. Well, they've already left Egypt by the time they're reading this. So what is this all about? Well, like I said earlier in the first part of the show, in Exodus 1:5 it says, "And all the souls that came out of the loins of Jacob were 70 souls, for Joseph was in Egypt already." So why is that 71? Well, actually, if you go back to ancient history, long before this, 71 shows up then too. It didn't show up for the first time with Moses in the Sanhedrin. It didn't show up for the first time with Jesus appointing 70. Who is the 71 when Jesus appointed 70? Was the one the Holy Spirit? Often the 71, the Sanhedrin, and the high priest. And the high priest is the one. And like I said, Simon the Just, we have an article on Simon the Just, and it was his grandson, actually grandsons, we should say, that brought in a great deal of the corruption. But you can't bring in corruption for the people in a system like Israel the nation was, if your nation of Israel is like early Israel. Early Israel was the Israelites following Moses and the way of Moses. They took care of all their social welfare through altars. The altar of Jehovah Nissi, the altar of stones and clay. But all their offerings had to be free will offerings, not forced offerings, free will offerings. You know, like John the Baptist said. Because see, until John the Baptist, at the time of Christ, everybody was making their offerings by the use of force to take care of the needy of their society, to bring their societies together. And of course, that's what was happening now in Egypt. 1/5 of their labor was going to belong to the government. And the government collect that, and they would put some of the funds in two treasuries. We talked about this before in earlier shows. One of those treasuries ends up funding the priests at the temple. And because, you know, maybe the gold was mostly in the hands of the Pharaoh, and there was probably some gold in the hands of, you know, the priests. But this was kind of uniting the priests and state, because the state was collecting the 20%. And then they would give a portion of that in another treasury to the other part of government, which was the priests. Well, what was their deal? You know, burning incense and, you know, mumbling long prayers. Or, I mean, what were they doing? I mean, they had the Marots, which are a lot like the Ten Commandments. If you go down through the Marots, 60 some of them, that it sounds like a lot of things like "Thou shalt not steal," from thy neighbor, and not covet thy neighbor's goods, and all this kind of stuff. And those are the laws. And they were kept in the temples, along with granaries were kept in the temples. Why granaries? Because if the floods didn't come, they knew there could be another famine. And you're going to have to feed the people. We're going to have somebody to do that. Now, you could maybe save up a lot of gold and go buy grain somewhere, but there was no better place to buy grain than Egypt. Because they could grow a lot of grain in Egypt. But they could store grain, and they did that at the temple. The granaries, the sacred granaries of the temple. Why were they sacred? Sacred means separate. They're separated out. It's not the king's grain anymore. It's the priest's grain. And the priests have it there to help the needy of society if there is another famine. That's what religion was. It was the way you believed you should help your neighbor. I mean, even 200 years ago, again, reminding you, regular listeners hear this on a regular basis, religion was defined as the pious performance of your duty to God and your fellow man. Well, God doesn't need your money. God doesn't need your grain. But your fellow man might. And, of course, what's your duty to your fellow man? According to God, according to Moses, according to Jesus, love thy neighbor as thyself. So if your neighbor is hungry, you got to feed him. How are you going to do that? Well, the best way to do that is pure religion. You can do it through public religion, but that's the way of Babylon. That's the way of Cain. You know, you force the contributions of everybody. And you put up a lot of stuff in a treasury. Maybe you put up a lot of grain in a granary. And then you can help out the needy, which is why the goddess, the turtle dove goddess of Nisi and Sumer, was also the goddess of weights and measures. Because they had to measure out the grain. The grain going out and the grain coming in. Did you pay your fair share? Do you get your fair share? Of course, that goes on every day. Some people think, oh, the old Bible, it doesn't have anything to do with today. It doesn't tell us anything about how to live today. You know, it's all ancient stuff. Ancient problems are the same as modern problems. We just put different labels on it. You know, and they had to have systems of government. And the Bible is about government. 700 more times it mentions government. It only mentions religion 5 times. It does mention charity and altars and, you know, things that should be for your welfare, but there are actually, you know, the tables that should be for your welfare actually become a snare. David talks about that. Paul quotes David. And, of course, the people that came with Jacob and his sons were now ensnared in Egypt, where 20% of their labor belonged to the government of Egypt. And this, and they'll mention it in other places, like Exodus 16:3, the children of Israel said unto them, would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. You know, Exodus 16. So, why do you eat bread to the full when you're sitting by flesh pots? I remember Prager, Dennis Prager, said, oh, well, flesh pots, that's where they cook fish by the, you know, by the Nile there in Goshen. No. The flesh pots, mentioned over and over again in the Bible, let's build us a city, and the city will be the cauldron, and we will be the flesh in the cauldron. That's the flesh pots. Civil system where the individual becomes a part of the masses. And they can eat from the flesh pots. They can take a bite out of one another through the flesh pots. And they have some leader who says, this is how much you owe, and this is how much you get. And that's a civil government. Well, that's what Abraham left. You know, that's what Isaac walked away from, didn't go back to. See, Abraham had the right to rule in Haran. He walked away from that. But then he had a son. He could send his son back to Haran, and he would have the right to rule. But it's not the right system. It's a system based on force. It's the flesh pot system. They also call them cities of blood. Because all your blood don't belong to you. 20% of your blood belongs to the government. All your sweat doesn't belong to you. 20% of your sweat belongs to the government. That's the bondage of Egypt. Now, that's a legitimate form of government. And God has even led them back into that because they have something to learn. So again, like I said, just at the break, if you find yourself back in the bondage of Egypt, you know, you might have an American flag, you might have an Australian flag, you might have a big flag with a maple leaf on it. But I don't care what country you're in, what flag you got, you're probably back in the bondage of Egypt here if these are the last days. So now we're going to find out what's in store for you. And what, and Jacob is telling them this, that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. Gather yourselves together and hear, ye sons of Jacob, and hearken unto Israel, your father. Hear, Jacob, hearken to Israel. This is a spiritual message. So we're going to use some metaphors in the allegory. So you're going to have to figure out where you fit into this. A lot of people try to figure out, what tribe am I from? Right after the show, I have to go meet with a guy who was called Reuben at one time. He took the name Reuben. He was, and I say he took the name Reuben because that wasn't his original name. But he was going to become a priest of the Carmelite Rite of the Roman Catholic Church. And he took his temporary vows as a priest and he took the name Reuben. So I was always fascinated with, who's this Reuben guy? And we won't get entirely into it. But Reuben, thou art my firstborn, Jacob says, hoping that they will hearken unto Israel. My might, he says, my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. Reuben, that's who he is, as the firstborn. Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel. Now, is he saying that, is he condemning him not to excel? But he's saying, if you're unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defilest thou it. He went up to my couch. Now, this is a reference, supposedly, to the idea that we'll have to explore elsewhere, that Reuben went up and had relations with a wife. Sometimes they translate it often as a concubine of Jacob. And if you remember the story of Jacob, of course, Jacob wanted to marry Rachel. He wanted to marry her. And he had to make a deal. Work for me for 7 years, says Laban, and I will give you my daughter, Rachel. And he worked 7 years, and they had the wedding. She had a veil on. It's night, no street lights, no lights on the tent wall. You can flick a switch. And they go in, and he finds out he just married Leah, Rachel's sister. Laban and his deals. Laban's going to get his comeuppance someday. Maybe he already has. But the reality is that he says, this is not what I said, Rachel. He says, oh, well, Leah's older. I have to give the first daughter first. He says, but I'll give you Rachel too. But you have to promise that you'll work for me for 7 more years. Why do you want him to work for him? Because everything he touched prospered. Everything he touched prospered. Kind of like Elon Musk. Everything he touched seems to prosper. Seems to. I'm not equating him with Jacob. But there's something going on there. Amazing. But the reality is that they try to infer that he had sexual relations with this wife of Jacob. But this wife of Jacob was the previously is Bila. It was previously the maidservant of Rachel, who was barren. Rachel wasn't having any children. Leah had a child, Reuben. But, and, you know, that's why he's, there's a number of different interpretations of the name, which is Resh Elef Hay, and Bien, which means son. So, to see, look, I have a son. That's one interpretation of the words. And that's you'll find it in Genesis 29:32, and we'll talk more about it when we get to that chapter. But to Leah, she kind of interpreted the name as he looked in my eyes, or he will love me. You know, that's, you know, you look into the girl's eyes and that's, you love the girl, you know, that's the whole dynamic. And Leah felt like she wasn't loved. Of course, she betrayed Jacob. First act with Jacob was a lie. She pretended to be Rachel. She knew that he wanted to marry Rachel, but she wanted to marry Jacob too, and so she went along with Laban's plan. A lot of treachery going on here, but then again, Jacob was a little treacherous. He thought he had to finagle his birthright, because he was the firstborn, away from his brother Esau. And so he did it with a pot of porridge, and then he did it with an animal skin, you know, deceiving his father, who also went blind. So, what can he expect to be any less deceived? As you judge, so shall you be judged. But anyway, there are other interpretations of this, other than what you come and see amongst the Christian commentaries, is that what he did was he moved his mother's bed, Leah, next to Jacob, after Rachel died, because he wanted his mother to be the second wife. It has to do with position and envious position and power or whatever. Exactly the dynamics of that, we'll have to get into it at another time. But there's a great deal of rabbinical scholars that believe that he never had sexual relations with Bila. Bila's was the favorite of Jacob after Rachel died. And Leah wanted to be in that place, because this was always a contention of Leah. And she suffered with that probably most of her life. Maybe she came to peace eventually. But then again, she became the wife of Jacob by deception. So she brought this on herself. So anyway, so it may not have been, a lot of people who like to think of sexual perversion and all that kind of stuff, want to go with the interpretation that he actually slept with Bila. But I'm beginning to think, no, that it was about a positioning themselves in power. And of course, that's why Joseph was thrown into the pit, is this envying the position of power with somebody else. Eventually, the tribe of Reuben is going to be the host of the first city of refuge in Israel. And again, the cities of refuge are simply appeals courts. So that if you make an appeal to that court before sentence is made, you can forestall that sentence while you're appealing your case through this network of cities of refuge. There were 50 cities of refuge in Israel. There are 50 states in the United States. Coincidence. Just a coincidence, I'm sure. So anyway, going back to our chapter 49, we have another son, Simeon and Levi, brethren, instruments, he calls them, of cruelty. You know what that word cruelty is in the Hebrew? Hamas, instruments of cruelty, he calls them. He calls them Hamas, are in their habitations. Cruelty is in their habitations. Oppression is in their habitations. There's a big long word they have there, their habitations, which is Mem, Kuf, Resh, Tav, Yod, He, Mem. And we could go through each of those letters, but you know, it's from a base word that is actually much smaller, but we see this introduction of the Tav, that there is an obstacle to the flow of faith that is put into their description of their habitation, that they don't operate by faith. They operate by oppressive means. That's socialism. That's communism. The socialist state is a state full of leaven. It's full of oppression. It forces the contributions of your neighbor to provide you with your daily bread. That's the instrument of cruelty, because there will be those that usurp. Now, what was Simeon's actual sin? You know, I mean, there was a sister Dinah, which they say was raped. You go back to ancient rabbinical writings, she wasn't raped. It depends on what group you want to listen to. But when you look at it, and they break down the Hebrew very good. I mean, they really get into it instrumentally and say, no, Dinah wasn't raped. Simeon thought of it as rape because the man she married and had relations with was uncircumcised. Because Simeon didn't understand what Moses told us about circumcision, that there's a circumcision of the heart. That's the circumcision you want. But Simeon and Levi did not have the circumcision of the heart. They had pride in the fact that they had circumcision of the flesh. And so therefore they were willing to kill the person whom Dinah loved and betray their people and were a part of making Jacob stink. And he goes on to say, O my soul, come not thou into their secret, unto their assembly. Mine honor, be not thou united, for in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they dig down a wall. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Divide them in Jacob, scatter them in Israel. So today we have a conflict with Hamas. Hamas is a terrible organization, wanted to commit genocide. I mean, it published it. It wrote it down and put it into print, that they wanted to commit genocide on a people, on their children, on their innocent children. They wanted to do that. Self-willed they were. Instruments of cruelty they are. And they came to power in a socialist state of Gaza. But the interesting thing is that if we go over to this state of Israel, they're socialist. They don't have just weights and measures. They have iron coin. They have a draft, which David repented of. They have a government that exercises, they have tables of welfare that are a snare. They have 60-70% income tax, far worse than what they had in Egypt. They brought the government in Israel today is far worse than the bondage of Egypt. Now, I'm not talking about the people. I'm just talking about the system, the instrument. There, the word instrument in reference to that. What is that word? Instrument. But we'll have to look at this. But it means consume. An instrument, weapon, jewel, It has lots of armor, furniture, carriage, lots of different ways to translate it. What does it mean? We'll talk about that when we return to Keys to the Kingdom. Well, welcome back. So, this is so rich in the interpretation of these texts, because they, if you start looking at all the texts and not just think that, oh, that's just that word, like I was just saying, all the different ways in which this word is translated, like kili, because it's kuf lamad, yad is the base word. But it's translated more as vessel than almost anything else. It's when we think of instrument, we can think of a tool. And there are other words that are better suited for tool. Although, you know, I mean, this word is translated thing 11 times. And like I say, furniture and carriage. But, you know, furniture, a chair can actually hold somebody, like a vessel can hold something. But this idea of a vessel, there's a controversy in the New Testament when Jesus commands that no vessel be carried in the temple. And exactly what that meant, I mean, it's full of metaphors as well, because there's a great deal of scholars that say, because the word that we see, kili, is also translated armor. And so they think that it actually could mean a weapon. It's translated weapon 21 times. So was he saying that you can't transport weapons from this place to that place? Or is it vessels? Or is it instruments? What is it? What does it mean? Well, I mean, right now, today in America, if we're going to equate this to things that are going on in the world, and I'm sure it could go on in Canada, is that you have groups, they call them NGOs now. NGOs could be considered a vessel. You know, a non-governmental organization. It's an organization. It's a vessel. You put stuff in it. They'll put $1 billion in it, $100 million into it, into this NGO. And then it immediately gives it to somebody else. And then it immediately gives it to somebody else. And then you try to track it. And then you find out the Treasury Department is issuing this money, and they're not even putting a tracer, a number on it, identifying. And you say, well, we can't keep track of it. And so they actually like freeze the computers. And they have to come in there and take the people out, physically remove them so that they don't keep moving stuff around. You know, the shredding machines were hot when we came in the room. So, this is not new. This is old stuff. But Jesus had to command, you can't move the vessels anymore. You can't move the instruments around. You can't, maybe he meant, you can't bring swords in, but it seems that they didn't say anything about checking your swords at the door. Later on, when they were in the Garden of Gethsemane, people had swords. One guy had two swords. So what was that all about? You got to remember, the temple was part of the government. It was the priestly part of the government. It had lots of funds in that government to provide a daily bread in the temple. And of course, we see the early church right away at Pentecost, rightly dividing bread from house to house, distributing bread from house to house. What bread? Where are they getting this bread? Well, they're either buying it or it's contributed, because it has to be done through charity, not through force. John the Baptist said you can't do it through force, like everybody else is doing. Rome was becoming a socialist nation. And Herod was following suit. This was the leaven. This was the oppression. Leaven is oppression. Got to get the oppression out of your house. That's what you have to do. So, but we can go back to Simeon and Dinah and all that stuff later. Let's go on to Judah and in verse 8, Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down. He couched as a lion and as an old lion. He shall rouse him up. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, unto Shiloh. Shiloh is mentioned in the New Testament. Come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Who is Shiloh? Well, I'll leave it to your imagination. Binding his foal unto the vine, and his ass's colt unto the choice vine. He washed his garments in wine, his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes shall be red with wine, and his teeth white with milk. Strong drink and milk, white with milk. These are symbols. Do not boil a kid in its mother's milk. Milk is the welfare of kindness, helping out the needy. But if you do too much of that, you make the needy weak. If you do it by force, by biting one another, then the teeth aren't white with milk, they're red with blood. But his eyes are red with wine. Wine often is representing blood, but his teeth white with milk. And so what's going on here? You have to realize that the system of God is not about exercising authority one over the other. Now, on our page on covet, under the picture, we see accepting the ring of power from the benefactors who exercise authority. All these government agencies, they're a giant bureaucracy, and this guy gives to this guy, and this guy gives to this guy, and this guy gives to this guy. Well, what is he giving? He's giving what he took away from his neighbor by force. And you don't want to do that. By exercising authority one over the other. Jesus says that. Over and over again he says that. In Matthew 20:25. But Jesus called them unto him and said, ye know the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them. If you're in a system where a portion of your labor belongs to the government, somebody has dominion over that portion of your labor. And they that are great exercise authority upon them, but it shall not be so amongst you. He says this in Mark 10, Luke 22:25. The kings of the Gentiles, the rulers of the Gentiles, the presidents and the prime ministers and the Congress of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and they that exercise authority upon them are called benefactors. Called benefactors. They're not benefactors. A benefactor takes money out of his pocket and gives you. He takes money out of your neighbor's pocket and gives you. That's a covetous practice. That will make you merchandise. It will make you human resources. It will return you to the bondage of Egypt. Now, it's not the only thing. You've got to put other things in the place. You know, up there where we talked about Reuben, unstable as water. He was his strength. Remember? His dignity, his excellency. He was a good guy. I don't think he slept with his stepmother. I think he wanted his mother, he wanted to usurp the choice of his father and put his mother in the place of second in this household. Was it a household of only 70? We talked briefly about this before. Abraham mustering 900 young men out of his own household. Those aren't his kids. Jacob, could he do the same thing? I mean, he's moving across with thousands of sheep, cattle, goats. And he's positioning them around. Is it only 70 guys doing all this? No, they had their whole household. But of his household, there was only 70, and one was already there. But there were hundreds, maybe thousands, of people that came with Jacob to Egypt. Now, I'm not saying the Bible is wrong. I'm trying to help you identify what they're talking about and why they're talking about. Because in the patriarchy, there are those that get one talent, and some that get two talents, and some that get three talents. To each according to his ability, and from each according to his means, but by charity. Now, they're working, their employees, you know, like Elon Musk has thousands of employees. He is, historically, I think he's paid more taxes than anybody who ever lived. But that's just his taxes. He's also providing work for his employees, and they're all paying taxes. But what people aren't seeing, this is the important thing, is they're all in the bondage of Egypt. Elon's in the bondage of Egypt. Trump's in the bondage of Egypt. All their employees are in the bondage of Egypt. And they're just hassling over who's going to be Pharaoh. Moses could have been Pharaoh. But he was leading them. He was going to set the captive free. So who are you going to follow? The guy who's going to try to make you a more pleasant, less rigorous captivity, but still leave you in captivity? Or do you want to become Israel and be set free? But Reuben, he didn't stop his brothers. He did stop them from killing. But he didn't stop them from beating them up and throwing them into the pit. Because he was unstable as water. Are you sometimes unstable as water? Do you speak up every time? You should speak up according to the leading of the Holy Spirit, which is when you walk with Israel. I'm not talking about a political organization over in the Middle East. I'm talking about what Jacob is talking about. Because scatter them in Israel means to separate them from the Spirit. Simeon, because they thought, we're better because we're circumcised of the flesh. You're only blessed if you're circumcised of the heart. And so we see Judah. Now we'll go to Zebulun. Very little is known about Zebulun, but there's actually a rich story there. Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and he shall be for a haven of ships, and his border shall be unto Zidon. Anyway, we could go into all that, but we're not going to do it right now. I'll leave it a little bit, you know, ambiguous. But Josephus even writes about him. And you'll see more about him in Numbers and, you know, his sons, and has to do with dwelling. But he says dwelling where his haven of the sea on ships. Haven of ships. And, there's a lot of secrets there, but we won't depart with those secrets yet. Issachar. His strong ass couching down between two burdens. And he saw that rest was good, and the land that it was pleasant, and bowed his shoulder to bear, and became a servant unto tribute. And of course, that's where everybody is today. They have bowed their shoulder, but some people bowed their shoulder because they wanted benefits. Some bowed their shoulder because they didn't mind being a servant. You know, many of the people who came with Jacob, if you believe that, were the servants of Jacob and the servants of his sons. And they all had, you know, prosperous families. And they were, you know, like I told before, when Abraham needed a wife for his son, Isaac, he sends his servant. And when the servant comes to the place of Laban, Laban is impressed. He wants to invite him in and get on his good side and everything. And he finds out he's only the servant of Abraham, and he has all these camels, and he's clearly wealthy, and he's probably got guards with him and everything. And he wants to be a part of that. Well, Rebecca just wants to water the camels. She just wants to help out. She's a worker. And so, you know, but Laban saw the prosperity, and Rebecca saw thirsty camels. So, but she may have been loading those buckets up from the well herself, or she may have just been in charge of the well and telling everybody to, we got to water all these, because a camel can drink a lot of water. But anyway, that's another story. The point is that there's a lot of messages in this, and being under tribute, which most people in the world today are under tribute, is not a bad thing. You can learn to be a good worker. You can learn to be a good employee. And there's a place for that in the household of Israel. You're not less. We can't oppress you. We can't abuse you. We got to protect you. You're a part of the family. When the enemy comes, you'll be very important. And we should not, if we're envious, we're vain. If we're vain, we're foolish. So we don't want to be envious. Each of us has a role. We don't want to bury our talent. If he's a good worker, be a good worker. But you want to align yourself with righteousness. Dan, he's a little bit different. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, an adder in the path, that biteth the horse heels, so that his rider shall fall backwards. I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. Gad, a troop shall overcome him, but he shall overcome at the last. And, you know, I will add a great deal more to this page on these different sons, and I have created pages on most of these sons because there are lessons to be learned, and we're trying to get through this because I want to go into something in the last part of the show. Dan doesn't show up in places. Other places he does show up. This reference, I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. It appears that Jacob is still praying for Dan. Dan's going to do a lot of things that are going to cause a lot of trouble. There's a whole tribe of people in Central Europe were called the Danites. I mean, that's where we get the word Dan Mark. Carried the mark of Dan. And there's a whole books written about these things. But their history is obscure, but the idea here is not that you're a part of a particular bloodline. You don't want to be watery like Reuben. You don't want to be cruel like Simeon and Levi. You want to be, you know, this whole reference to Judah and Shiloh. This is, of course, a reference to Christ. And Haven of Ships. What, there's a great deal more that we could learn about Zebulun and what that means. And there will be a place for that. Issachar was somebody who was also, in other places, could see things far off. He has this gift of seeing the future. And then we have Asher in verse 20. Out of Asher his bread shall be fat, and he shall yield royal dainties. Well, the reference to royal dainties could be a good thing or a bad thing. Because it's the dainties of rulers that is a part of that snare and a trap. You know, from the table, the dainties at the table of rulers that should be for your welfare is a snare and a trap. And the same way with Naphtali. Is a hind let loose? A hind is like a deer. He giveth goodly words. So they don't say much about these in these places, but there is a lot more. But he goes on here in verse 22. Joseph is fruitful bough, even the fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him. Archers, were there people with bows shooting at Joseph? No, it was just difficulties that Joseph had to face, had to live through. But it says, but his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. So Joseph was strong. Reuben was like water. So Joseph stuck it out. Joseph was, he may have been a little haughty when he had that coat of many colors. We don't know. It's difficult to tell from the text. But his dream made him sound like he was haughty. But his dream didn't come from Joseph. If we believe the scriptures, it came from God. And it was foretelling the future. He could see things far off too. And he could interpret these things through dreams. But the stone of Israel is the strength of a shepherd. And the shepherd has to attend his flock. I was up last night at midnight, at 2 o'clock, at 4 o'clock, checking sheep because we're lambing. But I think we don't hardly have anybody left to go. But anyway, a shepherd has to check on his flock. And somebody texts me. And suddenly, you know, I was overwhelmed with thoughts of a particular person. And whenever that happens, it's a prayer. The thoughts are coming to me about that person and a prayer, hoping that he sees some of the things of Judah, Zebulun, Simeon, that they had to see. And lo and behold, within 3 to 5 minutes at most, I got a text from him asking something about progression of something. And of course, it's up to him. That progression is up to him. And I think he knows it. But these are things we each have to follow, learn to follow the spirit that Jacob learned to follow. If we want to be Israel, if we want to be the sons of God, if we want to be the children of God, we have to, and whatever role God puts us, we have to be led by that spirit. We have to put aside our vanity and our oppression and our pride and all these things that Christ, and we have to forgive and we have to give and sacrifice and lay down our life for our fellow man so that we may pick up a life more abundant. And we have to abide in the strength of God, which is that we see in the character of Christ. In verse 25, even by God of thy father, who shall help thee, and by the Almighty, who shall bless thee with blessings of heaven, above blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breasts and of the womb. So, again, metaphors. The blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessings of the progenitors unto the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brethren. And that he was separated out from his brethren. Abraham had to leave the home of his nativity. His father had already left Ur, gathered up his family and all of the people, and went out and started a whole city-state. They only talk about him going out, but he had enough people to start a whole city-state. And the same with Abraham. Abraham went back to Haran many times and finally left with many souls. Many souls came with Jacob. But 71 was the Sanhedrin who were to learn the ways of the Spirit. In verse 27, Benjamin is mentioned, shall raven as a wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoils. What does that mean? But anyway, verse 28 starts this whole thing with Jacob and his death and burial. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel. There are also 12 characteristics that can be in each of us. And this is that their father spake unto them and blessed them. Everyone according to his blessings, he blessed them. And he charged them and said unto them, I am to be gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite for a possession and a burying place. And we see references to that in Genesis 13 and Genesis 24, Genesis 23, even in Ezra. But we'll talk more about this, and then we'll try to bring it up to date with what's going on in the world today when we come back to Keys to the Kingdom after another brief break. Well, welcome back. So this whole idea of Jacob and this cave, he wanted to be buried back in this cave. And it says in verse 31 that there they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah. The purchase of the field and the cave that is therein was from the children of Heth. And it goes on in the final statement here, and then we'll go back and look at that purchase. And when Jacob had made an end of commanding his sons, he gathered up his feet into the bed and yielded up the ghost and was gathered unto his people. So was it that very instant, that very moment? Maybe. Very dramatic if it was. But he wanted to be buried in this place. And of course, the whole story, like I say, is mentioned through numerous bits and pieces in numerous places in the Bible make reference to it. There are probably more than I can even count. But on the page, and I'm going to add a great deal more to this page as time goes on, because we're going to go back and see the origin of these stories, but we're also going to bring it up to date. So how is it relative to us today? And in Genesis 13:2, Abraham was rich with cattle and silver and gold. And he was traveling around with all this stuff, with lots of people, 900 armed young men, and lots of allies and friends all around him, because he taught them how to build these altars. And if you understood the red heifer, I heard stories today about red heifers, red heifers and starting up the sacrifice again. People don't even understand at all what the sacrifice of the red heifer is, so we've written an article. Of course, they don't understand what circumcision is. And so we wrote an article about circumcision. Because you can be circumcised of the flesh, but not circumcised of the heart. Simeon was circumcised of the flesh, but he wasn't circumcised of the heart. And so Reuben had courage, but he didn't. There was this introduction of water. Well, you want the introduction of the Spirit. And without the Holy Spirit, you don't have the courage to stand up when you need to stand up. And so all these are characteristics, and we're going to bring them back in as we talk more about the Old Testament and Genesis, and then going back up to the New Testament and get into Acts and understand what was the early church actually doing. Genesis 24:35, the Lord had blessed my master greatly, and he has become great, and he hath given him flocks and herds and silver and gold and manservants. That's where he got those 900. They're men servants, but they're not slaves. They choose to serve in the house of Abraham. And then they talk about hearkened unto Ephron, and Abraham weighed out Ephron the silver, and he had named the audience of the sons of Heth 400 shekels of silver, current money, with the merchants. They wanted to give him the field and the cave, just like Pharaoh gave them land. He says, no, I need to own this land, not just as a gift or cession to me by your benevolence. I need to buy it. You know, when Maryland cessioned land to Washington, D.C., I guess Washington, D.C. is now going to be called the District of America or something. I heard something about that. But anyway, the reality is that they cessioned the land from Maryland. They didn't buy it from Maryland. And then who owned it before? Well, you can go read Tupper Saucy's book, and he has reference to that. But there's an importance in actually paying your way. And if you do harm, you need to pay recompense. These young men did harm to their brother. And of course, they're much older now. They have lots of kids. Some of their kids have kids. And they're all coming into Egypt along with all their manservants and their household, which is a part of, you're a part of a household, a part of a family. When you're a servant in that family, you may have a family of your own, but this is, it goes back to, we've written about it, talked about it, the Anaitsus, the family laws. This is, the patriarchy is not just men bossing women around. It has to do with families gathering together and remaining free as families and taking care of one another. When you create this cauldron, the civil state, then you end up with cities of blood. You end up with the people within those cities biting one another, devouring one another, and they bring tyranny and tribute and destruction. So Abraham was this wanderer, Isaac was this wanderer, Jacob was this wanderer, but now they're going into a city state. But he says, we have this land to at least be buried in. And you can go back, and because he bought that, because he had his own silver and gold. But see, in Exodus 20, 23, the people were giving up their gold. Ye shall not make with me gods of silver, neither shall ye make unto you gods of gold. Now that's interesting. Gods of silver to me, gods of gold to you. And there's a reason why it's written in that particular way, but we don't have time to go through it. But in Exodus 32:3, all the people break off the golden earrings, which were in their ears, and brought them to Aaron to what? Make a golden calf, to put their gold in a golden depository, a reserve fund, to bind the people together. You know, Elon Musk and Trump are going to go in and look in Fort Knox and see the gold. They're fascinated with it. It wouldn't be funny if they go in there and it's not bars, but it's a big giant golden calf. Because it is. You've already made lots of mistakes. That's not going to go away overnight. You're not going to file some paper and all that go away. There is a plan. There's one in the World Economic Forum, and there's probably one with the Rothschilds, and all the different conspirators throughout the world all have their own plan. What's the plan of God for you? In order to know that, you have to find out what Israel really is in your hearts and in your mind. You have to find out what Christ was really saying to us and imparting to us. Proverbs gets into it. It says, cast in thy lot among us, let us all have one purse. And it actually, that's what sinners say. If sinners say in Proverbs 1:10, let's all have one purse, don't do it. Don't consent. Well, you already have. You already have one purse. You already have a golden calf in Fort Knox. And we're not going to go into all of it, otherwise I won't get to some of the final things that I want to share with you today. But honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. First fruits, that goes back up to firstborn. First, what was the first fruits? If you had a sheep, I have a sheep out here, first time lamber. It's the last one to lamb. sitting right outside, we're keeping an eye on it. The lamb's pretty vigorous, but it's a little frailer than some of the others that were born. But it's firstborn. And theoretically, I should give that to God. Well, how do you give to God? I go out and I set up stone altar and I kill it and then burn it up. And then God gets the smoke. No, I give it to the needy of society. When that lamb grows up and it's a wether and it's not going to be used for breeding. It could have been. I actually thought about it. But I decided that, you know, there it is. But that should be given to God. And that's what Moses was doing. The first fruits of all your sheep, of all your cattle, you would give to the Levites, who became the stones of the altar, the living stones of the altar. And they rightly divided the value of that from house to house. That was their social safety net. You got people like Dennis Prager, supposed to be the scholar of the Bible, Daily Wire. I mean, these are individuals. I love them to death. But I'm going to tell them the truth. Because I heard them say that we need government to create a social safety net. No! That's what the altars are. A social safety net based on faith, hope, and charity. Not force, fear, and fealty. But people don't know that. Until you know that, you're not going to make America a great again. Because America used to depend entirely upon charity for the needy of society. And the mere idea of using tax dollars to help your neighbor was considered immoral. And you were warned in early America that it would destroy America from within. So you haven't honored your substance. You do all have one purse. It's going bankrupt. And until you realize, repent, think differently, and go the other way, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And it's going to get worse and worse. Now, there's some guys out there trying to make things better, and there's some guys out there who want to go back the other way again. But until they hear this message, they're not going to get anywhere. They may get their bank account, they fill it up and everything. It's still not going to change anything until you actually follow what Christ was saying to follow. I mean, just recently, you know, I think it's actually humorous. Bernie Sanders and AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, went out and gave speeches against oligarchs. All these NGOs, they're oligarchs. They're run by oligarchs. They're making, I mean, I used to think, boy, George Soros is giving all this money to these, to get these district attorneys elected. Found out he was getting the money through USAID. And then using it to put his attorneys into power to determine who's going to get prosecuted, and they've been dumping criminals out on the streets. Of course, the reason you have so many criminals is you've been making them because you've all been doing contrary to what Christ said. All the churches doing contrary to what Christ said. I mean, Ocasio, in her speech, she says, referring to billionaires, the spoils of this kind of corruption and billions of dollars are not earned. They are stolen. Just look at what Elon and Trump are doing to our health care, our veterans' benefits, and Social Security. They are slashing the programs that we have spent a lifetime paying into. By the way, not them, because they haven't paid their share of taxes. Like I just said, Elon's paid more taxes than anybody. They've offered employment. They pay all kinds of taxes. This is, and as a matter of fact, even fact checkers came out and said this is not true. They're talking about, she's talking about the, she makes reference later in her speech to $880 billion that are supposed to be cut. Well, cut from what? You know, House Republican, not from Medicaid and Social Security, from the House Energy and Commerce Committee. You don't have to cut. You can cut, and it still has to be approved by the Senate. So she's just lying. She's just saying lie, but she got lots of cheers from ignorant, foolish people. But again, now there's ignorant, foolish people on both sides of the aisle. Everybody has a plethora of ignorant, foolish people. Because if you don't follow the ways of God, you're a part of the foolish. If you're still forcing, that was the foolishness of Saul. It was foolish to elect Saul because you were told that they would take and take and take and take and take. In, if you want to look it up, 1 Samuel 8, and that's what's happened, is they take and take and take and take, and now somebody's trying to, you know, find out where it's all going, you know, trying to fix the leak in the bottom of the bucket. Okay, but you're still going to need to repent and realize you need to create a social safety net based on faith, hope, and charity. Otherwise, I don't care if you got baptized by anybody. It wasn't the baptism of John the Baptist, because that's what he, when he baptized you, he said you had to take care of one another through charity, not through force. Couldn't use force anymore till you do that. And not just your local congregation. You have to think kingdom. So she goes on, just fights about the numbers. They are fights over our values as a country, she says. Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security were promises that we as people had made to each other about the kind of society we want. She goes on to live and living in the nation that we want to become. They are not promises from politicians to the people or charity from billionaires to the working class. These are promises that we have made to each other's neighbors, to neighbor's friend, to friend, elderly to young person, teacher to student. She says that. But if you don't pay your fair share, it won't be your friends that show up at the door. It will be men who exercise authority one over the other because you've gone back into bondage. She doesn't want to see that. It's very interesting. I mean, she was a cocktail waitress. She even brings that up. Or she was a waitress. I don't know if it was a cocktail waitress. I thought it was in a bar. But she brings up the fact that she was a waitress. She answered an ad. She did an audition to become a congresswoman. Somebody's spending money. She doesn't, you know, people talk about her net worth, and I'll lay you odds on know where her net worth is at, but it's not great. Not like you see with Pelosi and all these other people who become millionaires after they come into government on both sides of the aisle. But the reality is that I'm not blaming those people. You tempted them. I don't blame Saul for his foolishness. But his foolishness was that he started forcing the sacrifice of the people. Always at first for a good cause. But he plunged the people into war, into conflict. David could have slit his throat more than once. But he didn't. He ended up killing himself. If you follow the way of socialism and communism, you will kill yourself and a lot of other people besides. She says, I believe in common sense. I believe in the wealthiest nation in history of the world. When a person gets sick, they should not go bankrupt. Common sense, I believe that minimum wage should cover a minimum cost to living. I've even heard Elon Musk says, well, we're going to have a universal wage. Wrong track, Elon. No. You have to repent, think differently. And this is why I'm picking on both sides of the aisle here. Dennis Prager and Daily Wire. I mean, Daily Wire just doing a thing that that George Floyd killed himself. And that the guy that was sent to jail that supposedly was kneeling on his neck, which he wasn't, if you see all the footage, you can go listen to it at the Daily Wire. Oh, I knew it from the beginning because within I read the preliminary reports of the autopsy. I looked into it. I policed on those streets myself. I have a nephew who was a policeman on those streets. I know that street. I arrested somebody a block from there. But you were used because you didn't want to see the whole truth. Well, the whole truth is they're not cutting $180 billion from Social Security and veterans. Those are off the table. They've stated that over and over again. But I don't think they should cut it. I think we should make those things superfluous. We should actually do what Christ said. All you people out there say you are Christians, you are baptized, but you're still living in a city of blood. You'll end up with crooked judges, which is what the problem was, which was why they wanted to have Saul as king. They had crooked judges in their cities of refuge. You know, the sons of Samuel were taking bribes. Well, you think those judges making these bizarre rulings aren't taking bribes? Well, I can show you bribes on both sides of the aisle. Yeah, I know people in these governments. I've known them, you know, since I was a little kid. And that's a long time ago. But she doesn't really believe in common sense. Common sense is that you will not be free as a nation. Somebody else will rule over you. She even goes on to say the right wing will have you believe that these American values are something out of the Communist Manifesto. Go read our article at Preparing You on the Communist Manifesto. All 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto are law in America today. And it's only law in America today, not because of crooked politicians, although they were involved. But it's because of you. It's because of the false Christians and the false Jews. The Jews that think they're following Moses and are not. And the Christians that think they are following Christ and are not. And the Muslims who think they are following Abraham and are not. And until they repent and turn around and go the other way, you're going to have extremist waitresses. She says, I don't believe in health care, labor and human dignity because I'm an extremist, because she is. I believe in these things because I was a waitress. Well, she didn't say that she wasn't an extremist. She just says, I don't believe in them because I am an extremist. So the reality is that both sides of the aisles need to repent and find out what it really means to be a follower of Christ, what it really means to be Israel, what it really means to be righteous. It is not righteous to covet your neighbor's goods through men who exercise authority. It is righteous to lay down your life. Many of our veterans, at one point in their life, are willing to lay down their life for at least their fellow soldier. And, you know, that's a noble characteristics. That's like there were noble characteristics in Reuben. But there was a part of Reuben that was like water. And he didn't stand up for what was right. You know, there was a time, it's in the Bible, we'll cover it eventually, where all the tribes of Israel came to the tribe of Reuben with their swords at their side, saying, Reuben, what are you doing to the tribe? Reuben long passed away, but we need to understand the message in the biblical text and not be carried away with false interpretations of what the leaven is and what circumcision is and what the altars were and why we should not be like the governments of the Gentiles who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority one over the other, because we'll become human resources, we'll become merchandise, and we'll end up biting one another, and we will, it's not a promise to our friends, and the Bible tells us a great deal about not making pledges you know, where you sign up. I promise I will pay whatever you say is my percentage of contribution. And that, you know, that I will give you the power of choice. No, the power of choice has to stay with you. We have to return every man to his family and every man to his possession. And that was what Shiloh Christ was doing. And we have to do the same thing. And we can't do it unless we gather together. So gather with us at preparingyou.com, hisholychurch.org. Till then, peace on your house and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.